time of year, one of your favorite times of year, because I know March Madness, I think I saw today, they estimate like $3.2 billion maybe being gambled on March Madness alone.
Somewhere in the neighborhood yesterday, you could start watching at 11:30 if you wanted to watch. It was like the Southern Conference. Something like you could watch from 11:30 yesterday morning until about
like one. Yeah. So it's that
best time of year.
So gambling has been taken over. We have all these different apps out there. Every sport you can bet on, wrestling even. It's insanity right now. But, you know, more than just that, we always like to reach out and find people that bring an insight, even if it's some areas that we don't know a lot about. We say every sport, but, you know, we don't talk a lot of golf. We don't talk a lot of hockey. So sometimes we got to bring in people that might know something there, too. And this is the second time in a couple months we've gone out to Las Vegas. So we're going back out to Las Vegas. The host of the Chad Patrick Show, Mr. Chad Patrick himself. Welcome to the We Don't Know Sports Podcast, brother. How are you?
Well, hello there, motherfuckers. How you doing? Yeah, guys, I appreciate you having coming on. For those that do know me, you know that foul language is just part of the game. So that's how we roll. For those that don't know me, my nickname is Your Highness. It's real simple. I smoke weed and I give you the highest graded play every single day. 365. Doesn't matter. I cover golf, basketball, hockey, whatever. Baseball. If come baseball season, we're in spring training right now. First run. No run, yes run, first run innings, and pitcher props. I will make you all your Disney trip for your kids on baseball first inning props. Ooh. If you're a $20 better, you don't even have to be a big better. We appeal to everybody from the $1 guy to the guy that's betting $1,000 a game and everywhere in between.
I know you like in-game gambling, Biggie. Do you ever do one-inning props or anything like that? Or is that new territory for you?
No, I'll do inning props. Not always first inning, but a lot of times, depending on how the game's flowing, if they're going to bring in a reliever, you can go to a next guy's at-bat. So if Julio's up second in the next inning, I can put down, does he get a hit? Does he get a double? You know, it's certain odds to what will he strike out? I do some of that stuff. I like in-game betting.
So, Chad, do you like any specific thing about those first inning prop bets, or is there a strategy to it? You know, you seem to be pretty confident in that.
Well, after a couple of years of running close to almost 70% on props that are high variant props, yeah, I feel pretty confident. But here's what it is, and this is why let's just tell you how I got here. I was in sales. I was just a casual sports bettor. Three Super Bowls ago, I decided to make a Facebook group to do Super Bowl squares with my friends. And then I started posting my plays, and a few thousand followers later and everything else. Now I quit my job back in May and have been giving this a go full time. And I have no looking back, brother, no looking back. So yeah,
that right there is the American dream.
You just made Biggie wet. That's just what happened.
Cleanup. Aisle three.
Oh my God. So I know I want to hear a little more about that kind of transition. Like, at what point do you get to where you can say, take this job and shove it? I mean, that's to just go gamble full time or advise gambling full time.
You have to get rid of all your expenses. That's the only best thing I can tell you is I have no credit cards. My car's paid off. I have car insurance. I have a dog. I have to pay for food and, you know, here and there, you know, utilities, cable, you know, basic shit. But yeah, I basically made it all the excess stuff I cut out of my life and said, if I'm going to do this, as long as I got a roof over my head and go broke. Cause hey, back when I was in my 20s living in Detroit, I was out playing 15-30 poker, trying to make a living doing that when I was in my 20s. I've been in the casino. My first bet was at a Michigan Ohio State game in the sixth grade.
Nice. Yeah. Well, did you win it? Is that what got you?
Nope, I fucking lost. I fucking lost the thing.
And you didn't learn.
This will give you a little age on how old I am, but if you can do math. But this was right after Michigan won, not this national championship, but the last one. So the year after, you know. I'm 12 years old. Of course, they're going to beat Ohio State. I'm a diehard Michigan fan, by the way, if you didn't know. So, yeah, I was taking any action from any Ohio State fan. Now, I was born and raised in Toledo, Ohio. And if you know anything about Toledo, Ohio, flip a coin if you're Ohio State Michigan fan. It's pretty fitty-fitty. So I was essentially – and I don't know. And I didn't realize what I was doing, but I was essentially just taking action on the game as a sixth grader And so without knowing it, I guess this is my destiny. I don't know. I just, every time I try to go in to work a 9-to-5 type industry, I end up back playing poker for a living or betting on sports for a living. I don't know. It keeps drawing me back in.
And not everybody's meant for that 9-to-5, man. I can promise you that.
So I'm thinking you're 36, 37.
37. Yep.
Yeah. I was just going off. I was trying to think 97. 98, yep. Somewhere in there. Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Look at the like big brain on you.
So, how do you feel about next season Michigan football with Harbaugh leaving?
Love it. I'm unfazed, and here's what I'll tell you why. New head ball coach has already 1-0 against the Day Boys down there. By the way, what's going on down there? Nobody's staying. By the way, you bring in the AD from Texas A&M who shit the bed with Jimbo Fisher. Now you're going to bring him to Ohio State, and he's going to blow this load on Bill, who jumped ship over to, what, New England before they start. And now they just lost a running back coach to who? Go blue, baby. Go blue. Up in Ann Arbor. Their running back coaches come to Ann Arbor. Come on, boys. All the winners coming heading north to the boat. I love to see them. That team up north. That team up north, baby. Oh, yeah. I love the Ohio State fuck guys and all their piece of shit fans. No.
Oh, man. Hey, drink it in, man. I am not partial. We're just a couple hours from Columbus where we sit. And I've never gone to an Ohio State game because I don't really care for them that much. But I would love to go see if I could go to anything. Ohio State and Michigan would be a bucket list item for sure. I support the blue more than the scarlet and gray. I'll say that.
Oh yeah, I hate me some Ohio State. I don't know what it is specifically about it. Why, because it's not like they're a big rival of West Virginia, but they're in the area and their fans. Their nose near. Oh, Ryan Day's lost to Michigan 3 times in a row. He's got 4 losses. Better fire him. We don't lose to Michigan. We're the best team in the whole fucking world. You're not Alabama. Get out of here. Like, Ohio State, I fucking hate Ohio State.
Here's my take. And from trying to be as, more of the numbers side of things, is the closest resemblance to what's going on is what happened when John Carr came in from Arizona State. He came in, he's got the talent, he's got Urban's guys. Guess what? Now all Urban's guys are gone. They can't get a fucking quarterback. They got all the wide receivers and talent. By the way, Marvin Harrison, the junior, will be a Hall of Famer if he stays healthy. He is the best wide receiver to come out of college football since Larry Fitzgerald. Mark my words.
Agreed.
He made that. What is that Brown kid that transferred to Syracuse? He made him look like a stud, and that kid's not good. And you cannot be that big time of a program and be able to throw out these NIL money like they do and not get a big name player. You cannot have some of the best wide receivers in the country and you can't find me a quarterback to throw him the ball. That's on the coaching staff right there.
Last thing too, if you're Ohio State and your quarterback is leaving to go to Syracuse,
like
what the hell is wrong with you?
They ran him out of town.
NIL money Syracuse is getting all of a sudden. That can't be right.
They ran him out of town. I'm telling you right now, they ran him out of town because of the Michigan game. When in fact, they should have been running Ryan Day out of town. I'm telling you right now, he will keep putting up 9-10 win seasons, and he will struggle against Michigan. It's whatever it is. We go in these funks and these rivalries. It's, we had the war, right? 10-year war. Since then, right, with Bo, we basically go on 10-year spurts where Michigan goes on ice kicking for 10 years. Then Ohio State did it for fucking 20 years. Ugh. Now it's our turn again. This is just how the pendulum works. And if Ohio State fans aren't smart enough to realize it, you better wake the fuck up because we ain't stopping.
Yeah, but you need somebody who's man enough to just beat up verbally old people whenever they don't get their way. So Ryan Day, as long as he's picking fights with
Lou Holtz.
Lou Holtz. Lou Holtz.
How old is Lou Holtz? That's, I mean, come on, man. Why? That's, again, I'm not trying to make this, let's just shit on Ohio State, but I'm kind of there right now.
But to bring back, to answer your question about Harbaugh, I kind of dodged that. I think this is him. When he lost the Super Bowl to his brother, that has been burning at him, burning at him, burning at him, burning at him. I didn't see another head football coach sitting on the combine taking notes on all the offense and defensive lines. He's there to fucking win. Whether they're going to win or not might be a different story, but he is hungry as shit. In 5 years, he'll be burned out or he'll piss off the GM and he'll be back in college football retire. But he's got 5 years to turn the Chargers into something.
Yeah. So whenever they were talking about him and NFL jobs, since you're an odds guy, I mean, it seemed like the Chargers were the one from the get-go, and that's where he ended up. Do you agree with that, or did you think there was a chance he goes anywhere else?
And probably because I see a lot of Michigan fan posts and things like that, so I was seeing everything. And frankly, it's been going on for years, so it was one of those things, like, until it became official, like until I saw Adam Schefter come on the TV or something like that and say, hey, Harbaugh is going here, then I wasn't going to take nothing. Because we've been playing this game for years, and a lot of times he was pimping the NFL so he can get a better deal at Michigan. So I didn't know if that was maybe part of it. But honestly, I'm happy. Bro, you got us what you wanted to get us. We're good. We got a national championship. We're Michigan fans. We'll be good for another 20 years.
Yeah, I like what he did there. He didn't leave when he had to take the pay cut and go back to the NFL, which he could have done. He said, I'm going to stay here till I finish what I started. Now I can leave. Everyone's happy. I think he turns the Chargers around with Herbert, works the draft 3 years from now. I'm not saying that they win the Super Bowl, but the disappointing Chargers that we always have are going to be gone.
I think that defense gets a lot better. I mean, it's good. It's good. I think it gets better. And I think that's the edge. That's the difference, I think, from a team sneaking in the playoffs and actually making a run in the playoffs, as far as the NFL is concerned.
So I have to ask, does Harbaugh have any blood on his hands at all left over for Michigan, or were they just doing something everybody else does and somebody else was making noise? You just want to kind of, if he does do a 5-year run, is there any penalty going to be waiting on him when he comes back?
No. And this is why, Goodell has already come out and he's done this to Tressel. He did this to Pryor. He's done this to other people in the past where the NCAA slaps him with the fine. They then implement that in the NFL. So Tressel, I think, had to sit 8 games. Trell had to sit like 3 games. They just implemented it. They said if the NCAA comes down and smacks Harbaugh with a 4-game suspension, they'll implement that in the NFL. So for that reason, he will be served and won't be faced. Number two is, this is why he was being attacked. Let's go over what he was being attacked for buying a fucking cheeseburger for a kid, which, by the way, he reported himself, okay? And number two, on sign stealing? Bro, I could do the same shit at my house, yeah, watching the TV, do a better fucking thing. What? And by the way, did you hear they're changing the rules? Now they're all going to have headsets? So that's, yeah, not even a thing anymore. So what it is was, he was very outspoken that on the NIL money, why aren't the universities paying these kids? Which I said from the beginning, fuck the car dealerships, fuck the boosters.
Amen.
That's dirty money, dirty money. The ADs, the universities are still the ones making the money, and they're still not paying these kids. They need to be the ones paying the kids. And here's the problem. You want to fix the transfer portal? It's a contract, guys. Yes, I'll pay you 1.5 to come play quarterback here. You're here for 3 years, though.
Yes, yes. Because you see these kids now that'll play for 4 schools in 4 years or 3 schools in 4 years. They're constantly leaving. They get $500,000 or $1 million as a quarterback to come to a school. They're there for 1 year. They don't like it. They leave. What you said, contract tied to the money. And then, as far as the sign stealing thing, it was the dumbest thing either ever. Matt Rhule had a big thing on that last year when they interviewed him. He said, you want to get rid of teams trying to do that? Give us headsets like they do in the NFL.
Mm-hmm. Because
Michigan was kicking everybody's ass, right, there had to be a reason,
right,
for it.
There has to be a cause and effect, because you know they're not the only school that does it. Everybody steals signs. It's just like in baseball. Look, people are trying to get an edge, and if you're not creative enough with your signs, and people are going to pick up on nuances. Now, do they send or maybe look the other way when staffers go to other games? Maybe, maybe not. But either way, I think Deion Sanders said it best, right? Like, it's different in football. And this guy played both at the highest levels, right? He says, different in football. We could be running a toss sweep, but you still got to line up and stop it. There's still got to be a man on a man and a hat on a hat. So I kind of like that concept with it. So I don't really care about the sign stealing thing. Even like the Patriots, Biggie's a Patriots fan. We can overlook that.
Here's the difference, though.
You know,
here's the difference on the Patriots. Patriots were showing up to practices and scrimmages and trying to get that way. Michigan was going to actual games. They were showing up to game.
Same thing you can do on your couch, right?
Exactly. Now, I have an issue if you're sneaking into the, you know, secured areas or practice facilities or things like that, or their training facilities and filming, recording, that's cheating. But if you have a guy, by the way, I know this for a fact, MAC schools, Bowling Green, Toledo, things like that, send their injured players to away games to watch. So don't tell me they fucking don't do it, okay? I know for a fact, because I got guys that play for them teams.
The Mac are innovators, damn it. They're innovators.
Yeah, because they don't have the coin like Michigan or Ohio State. So, yeah, guess what? Every school does it. But, yes, you're right. When they start winning, all of a sudden we got issues.
What do you think about Saban's comment? I feel like we're just talking college football. We're going to talk about other shit, I promise.
It's my favorite football. It's okay. My favorite sport, so it's
you
all
pulled
good.
Us down the wormhole, damn it. Now we got to see it through. Saban has been very vocal since he's retired, and the more and more he speaks, the more and more you can tell it's really NIL, and he's being critical over that. And to what you were saying, too, about like stopping the transfer portal – we should go back to you got to sit out a year.
I think we
need that. Well, I said it. You guys are going to disagree, damn it. So let me say why.
Yeah.
You got to do something to incentivize a commitment there. If you commit, you got to commit for that whole season. If you transfer, you know, that's fine. You can transfer and you can still do the hardship thing. But no, make them sit out. Now, if your coach leaves or whatever, but like there's got to be, if you're chasing the money and you make a bad decision on NIL, then that's your own fault and you got to deal with it. And then the second thing I just wanted to say is Saban talked about the revenue sharing too. He was like, you know, if it was just coming from Alabama, he wouldn't have a problem with it. But he's saying every kid just comes up to him now and it's just two questions. How much playing time and how much are you paying me? And it's not like the old recruiting style. And look, there might be a little holier than thou thing going on with some of these coaches that have been getting out of the college game here lately. But, you know, some of it is they really did like that. I'm going to turn this young boy into a man and I'm going to take him under my wing. And like, that's honestly, if you're getting into coaching when you're young and bright eyed, that's probably why you do it. So it changed so much that he just doesn't want anything to do with it now. But anyway, why is the 1 year thing bad? Why?
Biggie, you shoot first.
Oh, okay. Here's why it's bad. You want to be able to have player movement, right? If we're going to tie money into it, it's to
why what, do I want to have player movement? It's to what I don't want to have player movement.
It's to what the smart Chad was saying earlier. You tie it into a contract. Now, yep. if I gave you $1 million and you came and it didn't work out, I didn't give it to you. It was a loan that you're now paying back. To what you said, they made a bad decision. Now you're on the hook for a fucking $1 million at the age of
40. They'll never do that. And that's going to be too messy to try.
No, I don't like that, because guess what? We all were there. And do you think we were all making the best decisions like that?
Hell no.
1920. So no, stop that. This is what needs to happen. In my opinion, I'm obviously very biased to my own opinions, but contract. Yes. If the kid's a walk-on and the school's not giving him NIL money, he can come and go as free. What's the deal? The coach can come and go as free. But if I'm giving you money, again, this the whole dynamic has to change here, right? The university has to regain the power back. And see, I think that's what Nick Saban was really talking about. If we want to get into the roots of what he's talking is, he no longer has the power and control. Now, that's a shock and a change for a lot of coaches. And there needs to be an equal balance, because the power was here, but now it's swung too much this way. And we need to find somewhere where it's in the middle. And I think what you do is the kids, they're grown men. Education is really what we try to preach, and it's bullshit, but that's what they try to preach. So let them go get a study and get an education wherever the fuck they want. But if that school is going to pay you to come to that school, then you have to have some type of commitment. The buying out thing or something like that doesn't work. Or what you do like the NFL, because frankly, this is where we're going with this. This is the SEC and Big Ten are going to join this thing. They're already working on it.
Yeah,
you're basically looking at NFL junior coming up, which is good and bad, because if we can get Morehead State off the schedule on some of these big schools, and we can just have for the fans, that's great. Can you imagine Alabama playing Texas when Wisconsin's playing Virginia? There's no cupcake. Now you're going to have your Vanderbilts and your bullshit schools you're going to beat up on. That happens. That's fine. But what I don't want is McNeese State playing LSU in the second week of September, thinking that 63-0 is something I give a shit to watch.
Well, the worst ones is Alabama was notorious before Auburn of always scheduling like the Citadel or some shit school like that.
Oh yes. The Citadel is always on there. Always on there.
But schedule. You know what? You're right. See, we're going down the rabbit hole a different way. Now we're talking about the SEC and the Big Ten. Who else follows them though? Because I think I don't know what the right number is, but I would think eventually the NCAA doesn't really do anything with football.
It's gone. Well, no,
So they're going to your point, it's going to be like NFL junior, but it's still college. It's still a little different. How many schools is the right number to where everybody's making good money and you have enough viewership and enough spread out throughout the country? Like, what does that look like? Because I don't think it's just the SEC and the Big Ten. They'll be able to yield that wand and pluck whoever they want as well.
So what I think should happen and what's going to happen is probably different. Now, what's happening right now is I think a big squeeze play is going to happen. They're going to squeeze the Big 12. The Big 12 is going to get squeezed. Obviously, Pac-12 is no longer Mountain West Conference.
They got squoze.
Yeah. By the way, how does that commissioner ever get another job? What are the, one of the worst commissioner jobs in the history of college athletics there at the Pac-12? Just let that was anyways. So here's what I think would be ideal. You would have four major conferences. Screw all this shit. I don't want UCLA in the Big Ten. I don't want Texas. You know what I mean? Let's make this geographically make sense.
Yeah.
I don't care what you call the fucking conferences, but we got four 16-team conferences. Okay. You play whatever it is, 10 games. You're going to play, and it's broken inside. So you got eight on one side, eight on never. You play seven on your own side. Okay. So that's seven of your games. You're then going to pick up whatever, one or two on the other side. And then you versus last year's finishing. So let's just say it's East, North, West, whatever. Whoever finished dead last in the East, the next schedule, the next year, they will be paired against the dead last team in each of those other conferences as a number one. And see, so where you finish in your conference will help. And so you'll play one team each year and it'll rotate. But then you're playing everybody on your side. You take the best team. That's the four. And then you can do at-larges out of it. Now, what's going to happen, I think, is it's going to be two. They're going to end up going to like 20 and 20 or 22 and 22. And it's going to be like AFC, NFC, just like the NFL. They'll squeeze the Big 12. They'll pick up those teams. And unfortunately, some of these smaller teams are going to get left out. And they're going to end up in like Mountain West or something like that.
See, the first one you went with is what me and Chad talked about before.
It makes too much sense.
I know.
That's what we'd also like to see. But the second one is where it's going. But I think it's going to end up being 24 and 24. And then some teams get squeezed out of the Big 12 and the ACC. And then, like, the ACC does kind of like the Big East back in the day. They were only basketball, added football. Now they're back to only basketball. The ACC might still exist, but only as a basketball conference. Or regardless of what they call the Big Ten and the, you know, the SEC.
Yeah, ACC, the big, in my mind, the Big 12 could disappear completely. The ACC will not, for the points you just made there. Yes, if anything, it'll become the Big East because there's too many blue bloods.
What about all this shit with Florida State, man? I mean, I could see that being a catalyst.
They're gone.
Like Florida State out of the ACC, Clemson will be right behind them, and then I think they could go. But also the other thing is, what about, like you mentioned specifically, like Vanderbilt, right? Like who says Vanderbilt and Wake Forest and schools like that would even get a seat at the table? And Vanderbilt or maybe Purdue in the Big Ten. Like there's got to be other schools. Like I'm not saying a lot, but there's going to be a few in the SEC and the Big Ten holding on for – like Rutgers has got to be a little worried.
You know, it's much harder to get a school out of – the conference, like to push a school out of the conference, then bring them in. So once you're in, it's much harder to get. So there would have to be, I don't know the exact bylaws in the Big Ten, but basically almost all the other member institutions would have to say, fuck you, Rutgers, you're gone. Like it's like once you're in, they can leave freely on their own, but for them to get pushed out, it just doesn't, you know, snap your fingers and happen kind of thing.
There's got to be like due cause for them to be able to be pushed out.
Yeah, and I don't see the benefit too. The reason they went to get Rutgers is because they wanted the New York market, so that doesn't make sense.
Yeah, as shitty as they are, it gives them that market. But like for the ACC, it eventually collapses. But if you're Florida State or Clemson, why would you want to go to the SEC or the Big Ten right now when they expanded the playoff when you've got an easier path in as an ACC champ?
I think it's because of what we're talking about. It's not about what it is right now. It's about what it is 10 years from now.
Well, then my
because
other question
the music
is,
will stop. The music's going to stop and you got to have a seat.
So two conferences, 48 teams. Notre Dame will never join a conference. They have to join a conference.
That or get left out. Because what's going to happen is, let's just talk. At the end of the day, money makes the world go around. And these TV rights is all we're playing for, folks. All the TV rights in the world. So guess what? Does NBC want to fork over the next contract to Notre Dame, who's independent and not playing any of these big time pro? No more money. Guess what? You're not getting stream on Peacock anymore, boys. Guess what? They'll be real quick to join a conference. I guarantee you that. Because all the day, CBS, ABC, NBC, you know, whatever they got the streaming apps now. That's who's calling the shots, right?
Yeah, it's all the TV money.
So they want Notre Dame because Notre Dame's got a great fan base. They pull, they travel, they do everything else. But if Notre Dame gets squeezed because they're not on the schedule with all the Big Ten SEC and they're left picking up BYU here and they're picking up a Mountain West team here, they're not. I don't think NBC's giving them a big chunk of change again.
You're right. It's all about the TV markets. And again, that's why I was mentioning some of those small schools. I know what it's like to try to get them out of the TV contract, but or even out of the conference contract. But if it's just football, though, and they're still there in other sport, I'm just saying, I don't know what could happen.
I know,
if there's money to be made, these schools are going to figure it out one way or the other. I mean,
do they have of kicking the school out, though? That's what I just don't understand.
Well, if they're trying to have a balanced number and they know how many schools they want, if you're weighing, you know, bringing in, you know, Washington State versus, I'm not saying, maybe that's a bad example, but you talk about the Big 12. So Oklahoma State, maybe, you know, do I want to bring in Oklahoma State versus having Vanderbilt when it comes to TV revenue and eyes on the product and things like that?
So here's the deal with Vanderbilt, and this is why Vanderbilt, they won't kick Vanderbilt out. Vanderbilt is big money.
Yep, they are.
Big. Do you know it's a private institution?
Are they the only private institution in the SEC?
I think. I was going to say that, but I didn't want to speak out of turn. But, yeah, I think they are, and it's a beautiful campus. But, yes, here's the thing. They're not great athletically, and I heard some shit come down with Stackhouse, by the way, today. Is that true? I've been – kind of busy, but
I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, I haven't seen
I thought they canned them or something, but anyways, the amount of endowment and the amount of money that Vanderbilt has, they'll keep them around for that reason alone.
Yeah, they are the SEC Ivy League, essentially.
Yes, exactly.
Well, anyway, I'm gonna make a wild right turn here or left turn. All right, so do you handicap golf? Did I see that?
Everything, yes sir.
Handicap everything. So golf and hockey, I read specifically, but go ahead.
Well, I have a question on golf because it's something I don't really bet on, but when you handicap it, do you do, you know, players to finish in the top 10 or the top 20, or do you do tournament wins?
Perfect.
Or do you
question.
Do it per round? I'm just curious because I don't know.
No, it's great. So this is what I do. And so normal, like let's say college basketball, for instance, right? I have created a formula, an equation, a mathematic, whatever the hell you input a bunch of advanced metrics. It spits out a number. I have that number that correlates with a scale. The scale tells you like if the favorite's this number, you should bet this, blah, 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 and over and under numbers. Golf's not like that. Golf is a little bit more feel, to be honest with you, and it's not as much hard numbers. So I was fortunate enough to play college golf. So I have a little bit of the understanding of the mental side of just competitive golf. So that helps. I've also played and been to a lot of these courses they're at, but also that's the first thing I do is I go to the golf course. I pull up the scorecard, you know, not really the scorecard, but I pull up all the holes and I go through and look, okay, if I'm building the perfect golfer, what does that golfer look like? Is he really good off the tee? Is he really accurate off the tee? Is he really good on approach? Maybe he's a really good putter. Then you got to pay attention to grass because you got bent, you know, where you're at in the country, the grass is different and it touches and holds the club different. And the ball spins different. You got more grain. Some guys play better on different grounds and different grass. So those things. So you're looking to build the perfect golfer. Okay. So that's what I do first. I'm looking for this kind of attributes. I then go through the field and look for players that meet those attributes. And then, I then go through and I have a list and I might have a list of 8, 10, 12 guys. I have it in my phone and just kind of jotting them down as I'm going through. And then I'll go pull up. There's a few of these, websites that pull out advanced stats and things like that. And I'll go and I'll cross-reference because I'm basically just pulling everything off the PGA Tour website. I'll go cross-reference, make sure everything's lined up. And then we go to odds because guess what? I might tell you that Scottie Scheffler is going to be the best golfer this week, but congratulations, he's plus 500 to win. Who gives a shit? That's not what we're doing. Golf's a tough sport. I don't care if you're Tiger Woods. You're still not going to go out and play perfect every single day. So we're looking for the value spots. I literally don't bet anything unless it's a head-to-head, unless it's plus 200. This year I'm doing it a little different. I throw one outright winner, but normally we're not paying attention to that. We don't care. We want to pick good golfers, and guess what? If you finish second, that's pretty damn good. I don't want to lose money because you finished second. So we do a lot of top 10s, a lot of top 20s. But we're looking for value. Now we're at Sawgrass. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I think I'm only on two golfers, and I have no idea how good they're doing. So maybe they're shit in the bed. Who knows? But we're on Justin Thomas and we're on Brian Harman. I think Justin Thomas. I got Bloons showing up. Anyways, I got Justin Thomas. And Bloons just showed up on my screen. I don't know what happened. Anyways, Justin Thomas. I think we had him top 10, and I think Brian Harman top 20. I'll have to go back and check, but I think those are the only two golf bets I have. I have no idea how they're doing right now, but they fit what I was looking for. Plus, this course is easy because some of these guys have so much course history here. Some guys just play this course better than others. But yeah, you know, it's golf though, so there's no set thing. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. My season starts for golf. Waste Management just works out. I live in Phoenix, so I go to the tournament. That kind of starts my
Were thing. You at the Waste Management this year?
I was. So I do it smart. I do it smart. I go on the practice round days, and I sit on the 16th hole. So I get one of the hospitality suites, but I go on the practice round days. Okay. It's a little more tame. But I've been on Saturdays, and it's a shit show. It is a complete shit show. There is, if you've never been to the course, there's quite a few hills like coming off the back of greens and things like that. And what happens is people start trampling down the grass and it gets slick. And you got all these little Scottsdale ladies in their short skirts and high heels trying to walk down these hills. There they go. I seen more girls' panties flying up this way, left way, skirts going this way. Guys, a lot of the ASU fraternities bring out guys and they make them do stupid like fraternity bullshit and stuff. Here's what it is. It's a fucking frat party that they play golf at. That's what it is.
Yeah, I got a buddy that lives in Chandler, and he likes Waste Management. And he said his last year, he sent me a couple of videos. He's like, these fucking guys are out of control.
Yeah. Well, and so I blame social media a little bit here, because now you're starting to get more of these people that go just to go be on film and film it. And, you know, and again, most people there don't give two shits about golf. It's a social event. It's a networking event. It's a lot of corporate people. Here's the one thing. I've been to a lot of professional golf tournaments as a spectator in my life. And usually when you have like Saturday, Sunday, especially the lead groups, it's real hard to get up next to the ropes or get a close, you know, especially let's say Scottie Scheffler and Rory are coming down Sunday, you know, good luck trying to get on close to the ropes or even getting anywhere near them. Cause massive people are going to be following them. Not at the Waste Management. You can go out to the fourth hole and go shake their hand. The fifth hole, 80% of the fans are all clustered on a 4-to-5-hole range. You can go out in the back part of the course and walk the ropes. That's why I like practice rounds too, because you can walk there and bullshit. They'll talk to you, bullshit with them. And sometimes I met a guy 2 years ago. He's now on the tour, Ben Silverman. I just happened to be out there on a practice round. And he was by himself. We started chatting him up. He was on a Corn Ferry. He got a Spencer's exempt. He's now in. I like him because he's in his 30s. He's just now making it to tour. So he's one of those guys that never gave up on his dream, kept just kind of grinding out on the mini tours, got a few sponsors exemptions here and there, and just trying to make a fucking living. And it's a grind and stuff. So for him to finally get a tour card and to be more on the schedule and making some money is really cool to see.
That's the grind. I feel like, I just got to say, I feel like Happy Gilmore started the Waste Management Open trend. That's what it looks like to me whenever I watch.
Well, I mean, yes. So if you go back, and there's old film, I want to say it was like late 90s, maybe early 2000s, with Tiger Woods out there on the 16th hole. And there's just people around. There's no stands. Now it's an arena. I mean, we're talking three stories. I mean,
it's turned into like one of their real big events. Like it's huge for the PGA now.
Well, and here's the other thing. Concerts. I mean, they had a Post Malone concert on Wednesday. They had like Dirks Bentley, and I mean they've had Nelly. I mean, they've had a lot of big name acts come in too. So that's what I'm saying. It's more than just a golf tournament.
It's a festival with a golf game going on.
Yeah, it is. But if you ever get the chance to go to 16, it's an environment unlike no other. People are getting booed, yelled at. What I don't like, and this is one thing I don't like, is and I think this is where some players got pissed off this year, is at the end of the day, these guys are out here trying to make a living. Just be respectful to not fuck with them when they're in the middle of trying to take a shot, right? Yeah. The guys with the thing in the middle of the swing, don't. They were doing that a little bit this year, and I think that's why some players got pissed off. That's where the line is drawn. But once the ball's hit, yell, say, do whatever the fuck you want. I don't care.
You just hit us with a little Jim Nance there. Environments like none other. Oh, like I was listening to the Masters.
I got a question for you. You still got about another 20 minutes for us?
I got a half an hour if you want.
Awesome.
So I was trying to look there. Justin Thomas 100, Brian Harman even. I was like, man, they're all right. One round in, they're kind of middle of the pack. But I was trying to look for you guys here was where I'm at as far as each sport by sport here. So I hate going back and doing it. So I have a CPA that we brought on that handles all of my record keeping. So if you see any of my videos, I usually never have any idea what my records are because my rule is, and we have a meme I made. The old, like from the maybe the late 90s, early 2000s, the guy was like, set it and forget it. The infomercial, you know what I'm talking about? So that's my thing. Bet it and forget it. Because I have today, I got 20 plays going on. You think I'm going to remember and keep up with everything? No, I'll see what happens when the dust settles.
So you don't get tempted by the cash out option?
Never. If anything, hedge, don't ever cash out. So here's what I'm, and this is where a lot of people don't understand what I do. And I'll give you the records and the units. So college football this year, I was 177 and 156, up 25 units, which doesn't sound great. But I'm a lot of underdog plus money player kind of guy. NHL, I'm 95 and 91, up 23.2 units. College basketball, 223 to 225. So I actually have a losing record, but I'm up 53.5 units. And that's because I live on dogs. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right now, and this is what I'm trying to sweat this way. I'm on St. Bonaventure's right now. And they just went to overtime. So there's another dog play.
Yeah. I was watching that for cash. I got them as well.
Got St. Bonaventure's. Oh, good. They're up too. So yeah, double overtime. Yeah. So that's a plus 130 play. I put five units on that. Let's look. I don't even know how I'm doing today. Let's see here. So I was fortunate. Are we recording this off?
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah. Keep going, man.
Okay. So I'm staying at the Virgin Hotel. First time ever here, just on a whim, I decided to stay here. I'm sitting at the video poker bar on Tuesday night, just, you know, having a drink, playing some video poker, you know, pretty busy bar, you know, start chatting up the guy next to me. I'm a pretty social person. Find out to come out, I'm hanging out with the Fresno State coaching staff.
Nice. So
we get talking, you know, and just like any conversation you have usually with strangers, eventually the conversation of, hey, what do you do for a living? Like always seems to come up somehow, like in general conversation, it seems like. So they did. And I said, I'm always very hesitant to tell people what I do because A, they have a stigma or stipulation or something, and I got to explain myself. And most people, my mother, I try to explain this to my mother, and it's hard, is I just because I like or don't like a team has nothing to do with what I'm betting on it. I literally go 100% by the numbers. And at the end of the day, it's like playing the stock market or anything else like that. You're going to have ups, you're going to have downs. But I think, and this is what I was trying to look at for you guys, where we're at. So I set a goal. So I charge $25 a month and everybody makes fun of me because it's nothing, but I do it for a reason because I want the guy that bets $1 on the game and I want the guy that bets $1,000 on the game to both be profitable. At the end of the day, if they're on the same play, it doesn't matter how much you're wagering, right? You're either winning or you're losing. So yeah. the goal we have for 2024 for our community is 300 units. We're currently at 115. So we're just halfway into March and we're almost halfway there. Let's see. I put out two free. Well, not every day. I put out. So every day I put out your highness video, which is literally a video of me smoking weed and giving you my highest graded player, best graded player every day.
I'll subscribe to that.
That's 38 and 35 coming in today, up 17.3 units. If I remember correctly, we're on an over. New York Rangers, Tampa Bay Lightning, over 6.5 at +110. I think most places have it at 6, which is fine. But guess what? You got to get to 7 either way to win. Buy the hook, yep. Get the plus money and go. Let me see what else we got here. College basketball.
We bet on – we picked every NFL game this year against the spread. We've done that for a few years in a row. And one of the guys that's not with us this evening, I think he finished
– finished 14th?
Number 14 in the country, like of any sports prognosticator.
Oh, nice.
People that work for like Bleacher Report or ESPN and all those people were on there. For some reason, Maurice Jones-Drew became a target. But anyway, the reality is though, like what was he like 18 games over 500? Like it wasn't anything crazy. But I mean, you're talking about like a record of like 150 and 130 or something like that. And like that's putting you in the top tier of anybody. So like when you're giving your win loss records here, we're not even taking into account, like you said, you know, betting the dogs and how much they pay out. We weren't even betting specific amounts on the games, just picking them no matter what. And it's still hard just to have a winning record of that stuff, let alone make money doing it. Cause you gotta know where to put the money.
So because when you're in this industry, it's kind of, there's, first of all, this is what I hate. And I know I don't like to go around and tell people I'm a handicapper because they have these things and they're like, oh, it's like a used car salesman, blah, blah.
I feel like that's got to be getting better, though.
Well, here's the thing. This is, and I try to explain it to a buddy the other day. There's a million guys on every social media thing that's going to sell you a package or sell you this or sell you that. And 8 out of 10 is bullshit. Maybe even 9 out of 10, but let's give them benefit of the doubt. 8 out of 10. And I have a buddy, very respected, very well-known handicapper here in Vegas. I won't mention his name, but he is best friends with the guy that runs the book at Green Valley Ranch. And he'll tell you right there, their numbers, about 92% of their card players that, you know, use their card when they make a sports bet are losing players. 92%. That's a lot. And so do you think that these hundreds of guys out here selling these packages and scams and blah, 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 blah. That's also the reason I charge $25. $25 for a month. If you can't afford that, then maybe you shouldn't be betting on sports. That's the other thing.
I like that.
I don't win every day. I don't win every week. We've been doing this as a paid membership coming up April. Well, actually, 420 will make officially 1 year. Just a random date by chance.
Yeah, random.
By the way, for those watching, we are having our second ever meetup here in Vegas on 420. We did our first one ever in Toledo back in, what was that, 11-11 in November. We had about 20-some people show up. So hopefully we get some more people out here for Vegas. We'll be at Ellis Island. We have our own reserve room. We're going to have our own craps table. We're going to be running giveaways. We do a first of 15 contest. So whoever does best in that's going to get $150. We're going to be doing a $420 slot pull. So you basically go to like high limit slots, you put $420 in. Let's say it's $20 a pull. You pull it 11 times, whatever money's left, you split up amongst the group. So we're going to be doing a lot of fun giveaways. My whole reason is if this isn't fun, why the fuck are we doing it? So we can sit in our rooms, we can sit in our computers, and we can bet on this stuff. And I realize it can be a very lonely thing. But when you make a community about this and you're talking, and it's a chat, it's a lively chat, and it's not for everyone. I get that because some people hate, you know, right now when I get done with this show, I'll have 80 notifications. Some people hate that, whatever. But we have, not just me, I have 3 or 4 other professionals in there and some other guys, I wouldn't call them professionals, but are very sharp individuals. And you can ask them questions. It doesn't matter. You know, I go through like college basketball today. And I'll go through and I'll grade every single college basketball game and I'll put that information out. Now, am I betting every college? Fuck no, not even close. I think I'm on 6 games today or something. So go ahead.
I got 2 things I want to run by. We have a friend. I have to tell him about this since he's talking college basketball. We had a friend that lives in Indiana and
you can't use the FanDuel app in Indiana.
You can't gamble there, but he was back here visiting West Virginia, which were degenerate gamblers like the best of them. So he breaks it out, and he just randomly throws a 25-leg college basketball parlay, and throws $100 on it. And, I mean, there's no way there was that much research into this. I didn't even know who the San Diego Tritons were, but he was betting on them.
San Diego. Yeah, they're blue, white and blue. They're in the Big West Conference, I believe. Very good defensive team. They suck on offense.
Yeah, that's see, you might know that, but there ain't no way our boy knew that.
No.
So anyway, that son of a bitch hit every single one of them. And
how much did they pay?
$228,000.
Fucking awesome. I've never, to me, a really long parlay is like 5 or 6 legs. I don't do parlays. I throw $20 here, $25 on them here. I'm not putting any significant money on a parlay. And I'll
that's my
why.
Problem. I'm addicted to parlays and they wreck me.
So I like 3 or 4 leg parlays. But beyond that, if you're putting real money on a parlay, then you've got money to burn.
Well, and everything is perspective, right? What means $20 to me might mean different to you and different to somebody else, right? So, and that's all perspective. But here are three things that we can't argue because it's facts, and this is what I love. Number one, the University of UNLV, they have maybe an interest, but they did a study over 10 years in Vegas on sportsbooks only. And what they discovered was on a $100 bet, on a straight bet, the casino's hold is expected to be roughly $5. So for every $100 they bring in on a straight bet, they're expected to retain $5 of that. For every $100 they bring in on a parlay, they're expected to return close to $35. Now imagine playing a slot machine. Do you want to put $100 in the slot machine that pays 95% back or the one that pays 65% back?
Only right? Willy Wonka penny slot machine. That one's got me too, but I've done good on that one.
And here's the second thing. To my knowledge, and feel free to check me on this, the first time in the history of reporting on casinos did the New Jersey Gaming Commission report that in New Jersey, all of their casinos pulled together, the sports books brought in more money, profit, than the slot machines in the month of January. I don't know the exact numbers, but it was like $197 million in profit through the, you know, all together, all the sports books in the state together, versus the slots only brought in like $180 million. Now, I have a few theories why, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, for people that don't know, like the slot machines are their money makers. I mean,
most casinos, if they could just be slots only, that's the easiest.
Well, because through the gaming laws, you only have to pay out a small percentage on your slots, and it isn't a jackpot percentage, it's a winning percentage. So they're guaranteed money makers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, now they're all computers. So you just put the computer system, say that, hey, basically, and it's so, and I'm not super into that, but I know the basics, which is most of them are just big computer chipboards. And it's all just numbers just flashing. And when you hit the button, it stops those numbers and whatever that combination is. So it's all just timing. If you would have pressed it a split second later or sooner, it would have been a different combination. You would have a completely different result. That's what's been explained to me is understanding of how these new slot machines work.
But what you're saying is for sports books to rein more money in than what the slot machines are doing, because
I've never heard of it.
Yeah. That's what I was
never heard of it. Yeah. And the fact is, and this is the crazy part. So, and again, I don't know if my numbers are exact, but it was something like $197 million in profit on sportsbook. If you broke that down, where did that money come from? Where did they get that from? It was like 82% out of parlays and in-game plays. 82% of that money was all like.
All right. So I just need to just tell me I'm a dumbass and I'll stop doing parlays. I thought I was doing good by not doing the ones they always recommend. I know that was a trap. Like if the sports book's telling you bet on these special parlays we got, they're probably guaranteed to not win.
Well, it's like if you go down to the corner and it's Chad's hotspot, he's got three slot machines because they're guaranteed money. People sit and drink. Sportsbook's different. It's like he's saying, you make a single bet on the Super Bowl on a team, you got a lot better chance than I love parlays, three or four leg. I feel good. Maybe an in-game parlay or a prop something. But to what we were saying earlier with our buddy hitting that parlay, I've never heard of anyone who's willing to throw $100 on a 25 leg parlay. Like much less
hit. So I don't know if I've ever seen a 25. So we have guys. So in our community, we have guys, and there's a guy, won't mention his name, but every day he takes $10, which is essentially what he would spend on lottery tickets, or that's his thought process. And, you know, on FanDuel or DraftKings, and he'll throw a 10, 12, 13 leg, and that's his lottery ticket for the day. Now, that's $10. He's betting 50, 60, 100 bucks a game, you know, $10 a day. You know, he wins one bet, he already made up his loss, not a big deal. That's fine. But I know too many people, that's all they do. They don't straight bet anything. I don't know if it's just because the you know, betting 100 to win $95 just doesn't get them excited, or what it is, they want that plus 300 or whatever.
It's the get rich quick thing. That's the problem. Everybody wants the low hanging fruit that's not really there.
And then this is the other problem that everybody runs into, at least that I see, and this is one of I always have to always coach to, which is almost everybody I know bets more than what they should be relative to the money they have that are willing to lose. I find too many players that, and I'll just use very easy numbers. Let's say they have $1,000 they're willing to lose in sports gambling this week. Okay. What do you think their unit size should be?
I'll defer to you on that one, Biggie. I don't have any idea.
I mean, if they get $1,000, they're willing to lose.
So, yeah. So it's Monday. I got $1,000. I put it in DraftKings. If I burn through this $1,000 this week, I'm done till next Monday. But I'm going to use this $1,000 throughout the week, however I need to do it. What should be my one unit size?
You should be looking to get like a 3-to-1 return on your money for the week.
No. I'm saying is, okay. So I have $1,000 to bet. What should be my bet size? Like, what's my normal, like, what's my one unit?
My rule of thumb is I always only go with half of whatever I have in my account, no matter what. So if I lose that half, then I'm only betting on the next half that I have left. So that's what I've always done. And it's done me pretty good, but
I like to do quarters.
70% of that, maybe? I don't know. What's the right number?
So if you have $1,000 you're willing to gamble with, your unit should be $10, which means if you like a play a little bit, you throw really? 10, 20 on it. If you like a play a lot, you're going to throw 40 or 50 on it. That seems crazy, but guess
what? So you're saying they should be going to smaller bets, even with that amount, spread it out more for more people, opportunity.
But also, you saw my numbers. I'm a high volume guy. You know, you have $1,000. I put out 20 plays today. Well, $200 a play or $20 a play, that's 400. There's half your bankroll right there. And I agree with you 100%. You always got to have money for tomorrow. You can never be all in. Never. But that's where it is. People, they get some winning. They get, you know, they bought in for $1,000. They had a great week. They got 2,500. And now they went from betting 40 and 50 bucks a game to the next week, they're betting 250 bucks a game. And they have a bad week and they're broke and they don't know what the fuck happened. They only had two or three losing days. I see it all the time.
Well, the two things I try to stick to, because I like to wager, are where I'm at for max bet will stay the same regardless of how much I have in my account. And then I try to make sure I don't chase a bad beat. I'm gonna get that money back. I have that money. No, I never have.
Yeah, the next one I'm gonna get this back, and you double down when you don't need to.
That goes back to my meme. Bet it and forget it, guys. Here's the deal. You gotta stop looking at it as today. This is a whole year that we're doing 365 days. One day's results mean nothing in the big picture.
I think that's my problem. I'm getting a lot of good tips out of this because I'm probably an emotional gambler a little bit, and I need to probably not be that. That's what I'm hearing here is I need to just
– Can I interject 1 second? Does anybody know the score in the St. Bonaventure game? Otherwise, let's check.
I can get a live update.
Because I'm over here sweating my ass off, and I don't know
what Biggie's got the
I can pull up the app
right now. He's got his bet slip. He can probably just look at
75. Oh, 74.
It's 75-4. Is 9 seconds left. Motherfucker. Let me throw this game on real quick, guys.
Sorry. I got 3 seconds left.
Uh oh.
That's what that says, right?
That's because he's in. St. Bonnie's up 75-74.
Looks like three seconds left. I don't know who's got the ball.
I dropped my phone.
What would a podcast about gambling be if we didn't stop to observe?
Well, that and
I really like the day, so they were like on FanDuel, they were plus 130, plus 140. I liked
they were everywhere from I see here in Vegas from 120 to 135. I got it at 125 just because the casino I'm at. That's what they
were down like 10, 12 in the first half.
Oh, more than that. I don't know how to work the damn TV. I can't get the fucking game on. All right, hold on.
I don't even know what it's on. USA Network, I think.
Yeah, but I can't. I don't know. Turn the TV on.
I don't know. Seven. It still looks like 75-74 St. Bonnie.
Oh, let's see. Actually, I got YouTube.
Oh, it's over. St. Bonnie won.
Fuck me in the mouthful. Yes.
75-74.
Shit my dick and call me Susie. I love that. Let's go.
So that's the other thing.
There we go. Live reaction, biggest bet of the fucking day cashes in double overtime. That's why you don't pay attention because I got enough gray hair. I don't need any more. You know what I mean? Jeez.
So give us some advice on March Madness. Is there any?
Yeah.
I mean, it's the biggest game. I don't know. Is it bigger than the Super Bowl?
So here it is. The Super Bowl is the single biggest sports betting event in the world. For a single day.
Okay.
March Madness for a week. For the week of March Madness, no week outperforms March Madness opening week any time of the year.
So I got a question for you. You were talking about today, you go through every single game, but you might only bet 5 or 6. So March Madness rolls out. When you're rolling through every game, do you ever pay attention to, you know, how a 12 always beats a 5? Does that play into anything or always matchup based?
I'm so anti-trends. When I start seeing like ESPN and all these places say, hey, guess what? They're 1-4 on Monday night or 1-12 in the prime time. Then I go the other way because why are we bringing this to attention? It's
like when somebody says this guy's made 9 free throws in a row. You know what's about to happen.
Yep. Hey. Yeah. Whatever it is, when it becomes so obvious, usually statistically things balance out. That means it's gotten so out of whack, it's going to have to come back. That's anything. I mean, that's trading stocks, whatever.
All of averages.
If something goes too far in one direction, it's got to come back. And so.
Speaking of really weird stuff, I'll throw this in as we move on. Daniel Gafford has made 33 straight shots. Of course, they've almost all been dunks, but all right.
Sorry. You just wanted to throw that out there.
I just pay attention to weird shit that I see.
All right. So is there a strategy on how to bet the first week? Like, is there something specific that people should look for?
Let me give you this. Keep it simple, stupid for your casual fun guy that's not here to make a living, but have fun doing it. I've done this the last 2 years and it's been profitable. More than those 2 years, I don't know, but I think this year's been so up in the air, I'm going to let it rip again. Bet every, let me say this again, because I did this last year and somebody didn't take Fairleigh Dickinson and they kicked themselves in the ass. Bet every money line dog. I don't care what the points are. I don't care what the seeding is. If the sports book has them as a dog, pick whatever the number is. You want to pick $20, $10, $100, whatever it is. There's 16 games the first day, 16 games the second day. Then they drop down to what, 8-8. The whole first weekend, you bet every dog money line. You only got a hit here. Fairleigh Dickinson would have made you all your money back on the one play. They were plus like 2,500 or something stupid. Right. So think about that. If you were just a $10, do math real simple. A $10 bet would have won you $250, but you have only risked 160 on the whole day. By the way, other dogs won too.
Yeah.
You only need one. So, and I had a guy, actually a friend of mine, and he goes, well, I'm not going to do 16s. No 16s. I'm not. And sure enough, FD fucking took down Purdue and he's kicking himself in the head. But yeah, that would be my keep it simple, stupid. Whatever is a comfortable number for you, 10, 20, you know, I wouldn't go crazy, but again, to each their own. Every single dog, I don't care if they're plus 110 or plus 1100, every single dog the opening weekend. For the last 2 years, it's been profitable.
This seems very simple to me. You're right. Keep it simple, but I'm embarrassed. I never thought of it in that way, but you're right.
Here's
all you need is a couple Cinderellas to balance out, even if you got a bad win-loss overall record.
Well, no, naturally, the favorites, more favorites to win. That's why the lane, but here's the deal. Most average guys, and this is what you get on the Super Bowl. Super Bowl is the only sporting event, and I know, where the sharp money has no control of the lines. The public money moves it. Usually every other sport, the sharp money's moving lines. The public's falling behind. March Madness, we get a little bit of this as well. You get a lot of fucking Johnny come lately, come in, want a thing, and fucking UConn's really good. Of course they can cover 12 and a half. They don't know nothing about this mid-major school out of the Southland Conference that I've been betting on all year that really plays great defense. They've
got seven seniors. And
yeah, well, that's the other thing. So, you know, we talked about the transfer portal earlier is – that was always the backbone on these smaller schools, right? Is, okay, the one and done thing, we're not going to compete with the Kentucky. John Calipari is going to turn and burn kids left and right. That's fine. But what we're going to do is we're going to bring kids in. We're going to develop them. Like, okay, I was at the Mountain West game, right? Fresno State, God bless their soul, took them sons of bitches to overtime. And that's a hell of a game because they should have got ran out of the fucking building. But I'll tell you right now, you look at that roster, they got two freshmen. Everybody else is juniors and seniors. Now, they're a shit team. They lost 20 fucking games this year, but they beat Wyoming yesterday, played out of their ass, and they came out like hotcakes today. You look for those teams in the tournament. You want guys. Here's another one you want to look for. Michigan, years ago, when they actually had a good basketball team, they would have these kids come in from these Ivy League or small schools, point guards, right? Fifth-year senior, run the point. Who else than a 23-year-old kid that run the point? I would love that. Keep me away from freshman point guards, if possible. I love a good big man. Off the top, I don't. Here are the teams that I'm kind of thinking I'm going to be loving on. I love me some UConn. I think it's really hard to repeat. I love me some BYU. And BYU, people sleep on BYU, and I'll tell you why. Every kid in that starting lineup shoots the three well. Here's a number that will blow you out. I'll ask you the question. I'll let you guess, and I'll give you the answer. Okay. So Who is the number one team in the country for attempts percentage? So of all their attempts, they take the highest attempt percentage from three. Who is that team? And it's a power school. It's a big school. It's not a small school.
Oh, well, it's not BYU. Is it? Okay. Yeah,
like 54% of their attempts.
So we've seen BYU. Unfortunately, it's been a bad year for us West Virginia fans without Huggins there and that whole fiasco. But we have got to see. It's so weird, BYU in the Big 12. But, yeah, they are a for a team like West Virginia that decided not to play defense at all this year, they were not a fun team to play against.
But they were a West Virginia was a pain in my ass at home. They were two different teams, home and away.
Yeah.
The good was Kansas State kicked their ass, but I got maybe it was Cincinnati or somebody went in there at Alazon and West Virginia gave them hell. But yeah, West Virginia is going to suck in conference play. I think on a neutral court, they're better at home. Let's see. Bama was going to be the guess I thought you guys were going to go with. Bama's fourth on that list, if I remember correctly. They shoot close to 50%. They're almost a 50-50 team, meaning flip a coin where they're going to shoot the ball from. Why is that important? Because if you have a high shoot, a three-point shooting team, what does that lead to? Well, you're going to have a lot of misses, more than just layups and long rebounds. So now you got to look at rebounding too, right? Here's what I love about Utah. Or not Utah, sorry.
BYU,
which happens to be in the – I guess, but BYU is, they got a lot of tall guys. They all shoot the three, which means if somebody gets cold, somebody's going to step up, and they all play really good fundamental box out type rebounding. Any team that shoots the three well, a three well, can beat any team. Teams like Alabama can beat any team any day if they get hot from three. BYU is another one. Just trying to think off the top of my head. Actually, my alma mater is number two on the list for attempts. University of North Florida, like 52%, I believe, or something like that, of their attempts come from three. But there's a team that don't play no defense. So if they're shooting hot, they'll win. If not, they're not.
Is BYU just been a three school since Jimmer Fredette? Did he break the mold there? Remember that freaking clown?
Yeah.
He was chucking up from half court. Is he?
To go off on a quick tangent real China. Quick. Better college shooter for net guy or JJ Redick? College shooter.
You say Kyle guy?
It's an opinion. I have an opinion. Yeah, JJ Redick for Duke.
I just remember Redick like you were fear to him. Like he
would you automatic. Say again? JJ yeah. Redick or
the now he's brain farted it. The kid you just mentioned for BYU.
Jimmer.
In college, yes. I liked Jimmer better because I felt like he had unlimited range.
But I felt like he had unlimited control. Like, they didn't give him any guidance. They just said, go out there and chuck it. Just that was it. At least Redick had to do it in the course of another offense with players that actually –
Well, he had guys that actually could play, where yeah. Fournette was the team where JJ had to find a role. But what was impressive, for me at least, and I don't know, but I think he had the record, at least at Duke, for highest free throw percentage make or something along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah,
he was automatic from the line.
You know, what's funny is you talk about just how important shooting is when it comes to things like the tournament. 10 years ago, the narrative is, well, if they're not shooting well, they're not going to win. You know, and now it's like you need to be a team that shoots well. It's like that game has changed so much where you value that, where it used to be more like a gimmick almost. It's like, yeah, they can shoot well, but when it comes down to crunch time, are they going to make the tough shots? But now, yeah, you take the guys that just fire it, or the ones that run up and down the court like crazy. Those are the styles I always look for.
I got three teams, and I just kind of wonder what your opinion is on them as far as, you know, lead eight, you know, final four type teams. Houston.
So this is going to be tough because I don't know what the brackets look like. So that's going to be a big thing. But just in a
just kind of generality of
– Yeah. All right. Go ahead. Houston is a question mark for me, but go ahead.
Houston, Auburn, Purdue.
I know Purdue already is no. They don't ever make it that far. Well,
I stand by their top five every year.
It don't matter.
Fade Purdue. Fade Purdue. Fade Purdue. Fade Purdue. Fade Purdue.
Fade Purdue. Fade Purdue. Fade Purdue. Yeah. I know a lot of people think Purdue are going to win it all this year. Until I see it, I'm not going to believe it.
Okay.
If they can win the Big Ten tournament, then maybe I think, maybe they might. But
I still
are they
wouldn't
lose
believe
in the first round. No, they're not going to lose in the first round this year. That ain't going to happen again. But get bounced in the first weekend or second weekend. Yeah, I do not. Here, I'll stick my neck out. I do not have Purdue making the Final Four.
Okay. All right.
I wouldn't be surprised
to see him lose first weekend. The reason I ask about Auburn is I saw this stat leading into their last like two games of the season. They had 22 wins, and every time they won by 10 or more points. So it's like when they play well, they're really good. Bruce Pearl's had them, what, 3-4 years ago they played Virginia in the national title?
So I forgot all about that.
They're a team that isn't up there when I think of like UConn, some of the other teams we talked about,
but they've been good.
They play well.
They're one of my kind of sneaky plays. I like them a lot because they struggled this year on a lot of home road splits. Well, guess what? We're on neutral courts, folks.
Yep.
So that's where I think a lot of people miss here. And I'll be honest, I handicap better neutral courts because then we don't have to factor in a lot of – here's the thing. This is the way I look. And I was going to get this on baseball, but the reason I only do first innings in baseball is because it's the least amount of variables. I want the least amount of moving pieces. So, again, when you start factoring home crowds, we got to go into, you know, Morgantown to play West Virginia, or you got to go into Austin to play Texas or whatever. That's different than heading out to San Diego to play, you know, I mean, it's different. Or these preseason tournaments, right? That's a different mindset. So I tend to do better because then it's more pure, right? We're not factoring home and away in there.
Right. That little tangible is not part of it.
Yeah. Give me the less moving pieces, the less volatility that I can, you know, have, the better.
Yeah, it makes it more, it's kind of like rivalry games, home court, that kind of stuff that gives it a little bit extra juice that it's hard to account for. Sometimes it's there. It's not measurable. You know what I mean? It's just this random shit that happens.
And rule of thumb, a lot of times your big marquee games I'm not on. The lines are too good. There's too much action. There's too many eyes on it. Honestly, I will make a living in the Southland Conference, Big West Conference.
My dad makes fun of me.
My dad makes fun of me. He's like, I was like, yeah, I just hit a nice bet on Lamar. He said, Lamar, where the fuck is Lamar at? Yeah. I said, I think it's somewhere in Texas, but I'm not even sure. So he's like, all right, I'll throw it on. He's got ESPN. He throws the game on. He goes, is it a fucking high? Oh, you betting on fucking high school games? These gyms hold 500 people. And I said, yeah, but nobody else is betting on the game. So guess what? I get to do whatever the fuck I want. Nobody gives me. Yeah. Oh, it's great.
Those are easy to bet and forget too, right? Yeah, I mean, you know, you're not.
No, those are the ones I like to watch. I'm one of only five people in the world probably watching Lamar, you know, McNeese State go at it on a Tuesday afternoon, you know. But hey,
man, we used to get Bob Picozzi. He used to work for ESPN. He'd come on our show a couple times for March Madness, and he always would cover like the MEAC and all those small Northeast conferences.
Yes,
and that was his thing. He was like, there's no endorsement deals waiting on these guys. There's no pro game waiting on these guys. They're just these kids out there balling out. And it was magical. Like Vermont and schools like that.
But, well, that's what you got to tell the kids from Fresno State today. And I think that's what the coaching says, guys, especially your seniors. This is your last time playing organized basketball, right? These kids ain't going pro. I mean, they maybe one can go European or something like that. But, and that's their thing is, look, we've done spent 6 months in the gym busting our fucking asses. I just need you to give me, and they did. And I give them credit because they should have got blown out by fucking Utah State. If you're in the gym, I was there I like to get there an hour before and watch the warm ups because then you get a feel for body language. You get to see, are these kids in it? And always with the college kids, more than the pros, be careful of the morning games.
Oh yeah.
Do you like waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning when you're 18? I do it now because I'm old, but when I was a kid, I was sleeping at noon if you let me.
I love that that's where you like making money at, because I like to bet some Summit League, some MAC. The Horizon's more well-known, but Southern Conference. And
Missouri Valley.
And they'll give me,
Horizon League.
Do you know any of the players? I'm like, well, I can watch the game because I get every channel. I like the lines better on these games, and I feel like I can bet them more true home and road. I'm glad that someone who is a professional and does this for a living, thank you.
My school is an Atlantic Sun Conference, so I'm used to, you know, we didn't have a North Florida doesn't have a football team. Basketball is all we had. So Jacksonville, the Dolphins, little private school motherfuckers, those were our rivalries. Hitting with the Ospreys, the Swoop. But yeah, Yeah, but so Stenson and Florida Gulf Coast and all those schools, I'm used to those schools because I'm familiar. They were in our conference, Campbell, things like that. I think Campbell's not in there anymore, but Campbell was in Atlantic Sun at one point. But yeah, it's I love it because you're right. Those kids are playing for the love of the game. That's those it. Kids aren't walking into the coach's locker room. I guarantee that Huddy, Coach Hudson here at Fresno State, I guarantee when they get on the bus or whenever they head back to California and they kind of do their exit interview stuff, I guarantee not one kid says, hey, how much money am I getting to come back here next year?
All right, man. I got to start wrapping up, although I feel like we could go another hour if we wanted to. Where are you eating at tonight, man? You're in Vegas. You can go anywhere. Where are you going?
That's a great question. Probably somewhere here in the hotel, but they do have a $21.99 steak and shrimp special down the street. I might have to go check it out.
Man, you got, hey,
can't just, go wrong with that.
Do they still have those $4 potato bar buffets in Vegas? I hadn't seen them in a while.
Nah. Honestly, if you want my opinion, let's bring the mob back to run Vegas. That's when the life was good because these corporate fucks are ruining it.
Hey, I'm just going to say Casino is one of my favorite movies ever.
We can
just
let's end the episode here. Top three Vegas related movies. Number one, Casino. Number two, Vegas Vacation. Number three.
I mean, you got to say The Hangover.
Which one?
The first one. Come on.
Okay. Here's my honest opinion. If you took all three individually and watched them in no particular order and said which one's the best, I think the second one's that. It's just going to be a little controversial. Second Hangover is actually the best of all three, in my opinion.
Ooh, that's a hot take. That's a hot take.
That is scorching hot.
All right. Tell everybody.
They don't call it Bangkok for nothing.
Tell everybody again about your show and where can they find it?
All right, guys. We Win You Win. You're probably getting to see it. But anyways, wewinyouwin.com. You can get us anywhere from there. Everything is on there. But YouTube, we do the Chad Patrick Show on there. I do taco reviews. I live in Phoenix, Arizona. I like Dave Portnoy. So I'm gonna pay him some homage. I'm gonna be the Dave Portnoy of the West. We're doing taco reviews until we try them all in Maricopa County or wherever I'm at. So I'm tacking street tacos. We do that. We do on the podcast. What I'm doing right now is whatever FanDuel or DraftKings has for their boost, or you know, a lot of times they do 50%, is I'll go ahead and give you that play. I think we've only missed one since we're only 6 or 7 episodes in this season, but I think we've only missed one. I know we hit a 4-leg parlay for about 650 on Tuesday. I don't know. But yeah, so check it out. Again, completely free. I'm trying to put out as much free information as possible. We do also have a paid community. It's $25 a month. You're not getting just plays. You're getting literally direct access to me and the other people. We're here to help. Trust me, I'm not going to get rich off your $25. I just need to get the free loan sons of bitches out, because we did. We ran a free thing on Discord, and you had hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people. And the biggest pains in my ass are the free loan sons of bitches. So we charge a small nominal thing just to keep the freeloaders out, and it works out great. We got about 100 people in there. They're degenerate. Here's what I'll tell you: if you're not a degenerate, if you're not betting 4 or 5 days a week, it's going to be too much for you, because we're going hard every day.
Well, I mean, you're doing it for a living, right? I mean, that's what you got to do. And in case people are struggling, Biggie, in West Virginia, where do you go if you're having trouble with gambling?
You call 1-800-GAMBLER or 1-800-GAMBLER.net if you're not a phone person.
That's us doing our due diligence and trying to keep people safe out there.
Yeah, here's the biggest takeaway. I'll leave you with this. If you learn nothing from this show, is you're betting too much. More than likely, if you're listening to this show and you're a sports bettor, you're probably risking too much money. That's a good chance. So yeah, stay within your means. Tomorrow always comes. Forget today. You have, once you place the bet, you're done. That's what people forget. It's in, you're putting your money on 20-year-old kids. The fate's in their hands now. Just sit back and watch.
Let it rip, baby. I love it. Chad, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. It's been a pleasure. We'll get you back on some other time, man.
Please, you got please. Fun. Masters, bring me on for any of the majors. I'll do golf and also baseball season. Let's get some Nerfy and some first inning shit going.
Hell yeah. All right, man. We'll talk again soon.
Deuces.